Okay, it's Monday the 12th of July, and we're in Melbourne on Wurundjeri land, and I'm with Bob Summer. I'm here at ICAP. Welcome, Bob.
Okay, glad to be here.
Okay, great. How did you get into the area of work that you do? Or what is the work that you do?
Well, right, I'm retired, but I have been an environmental psychologist for many, many years. I started, after the Second World War, there had been a really, deterioration of mental health facilities around the world. No money had gone into them. The staff was terrible. And so there was a reform wave. I was a do-gooder. I wanted to make a better world. And I felt that the mental health system needed help. There was an ongoing reform wave, and I was hired as a research psychologist in a mental hospital. One kind of strange aspect was that I noticed the physical environment, these heavy doors that were banging, the smells, and these places looked like castles there. They violated Florence Nightingale's first rule for a hospital to do the sick no harm. So I began working in this one hospital with the superintendent, a man named Humphrey Osmond, to improve the hospital. And lo and behold, we found that as we improved the physical environment, the patients responded. And I became very, very interested in this because nobody had mentioned the physical environment during my whole graduate school, for all my schooling. No teacher had ever asked me whether the chairs were comfortable or the lighting was good, whether I could even see the blackboard. And I became interested in the effect of the physical environment on people's behavior. And I found that architects really wanted this kind of information, so I began working with architects and writing for them, and I taught at a couple architecture schools and developed a career in environmental psychology and helped develop the field of environmental psychology as well.
Wow, okay, so a groundbreaker. Yeah, all right. So you said that you're retired now.
Yes.
But in terms of...
Well, I still teach. August 2nd, I'll teach a summer school course there. No, I love what I do, and if it hadn't been for a kind of peculiar pension plan, I wouldn't have retired at all.
Yeah.
But I worked 40 years at a place which got me to the highest level, I could get, and I'd either be working for free or retiring. But that's kind of irrelevant.
What was that place that you worked for 40 years?
Oh, University of California.
Okay. Yeah.
I've actually now worked, but I retired after 40 years.
Yeah. Okay.
I worked in many different units. I chaired four departments at University of California, Davis.
Yeah.
The last one was art. Before that, environmental design, rhetoric and communication, and psychology. I would have gotten terribly bored just hanging around the one department.
Fair enough. In terms of doing your environmental work, I wanted to ask you about making the time to do it.
I believe very strongly in it. Like, I helped develop a bicycle path system, an award-winning bicycle path system in Davis. Because I rode a bicycle, my kids rode a bicycle on that system, and now my grandkids ride in the Davis bike path system. I worked with the State Department of Food and Ag in developing farmers markets. I merged the different parts of my life.
Okay.
Like farmers markets. I shop at a farmers market. I paint pictures of, I paint watercolors of fruits and veggies at the markets. Helped the state to develop farmers markets around the state to sell local produce, locavores, eating locally.
Mm-hmm.
I also then wrote maybe 30 articles about farmers markets, which I got academic credit for, academic brownie points, and I wrote a trade book on farmers markets, a photo essay. So it wasn't making time.
Yeah.
I was paid to do research, and I chose to do some of my research on, you know, environmental issues.
Yeah. Okay. So, but way back when you were, say, with the mental health system, say, in the reform then, were the environmental aspects of that separate to your work, or that was
you were
saying this is what needs to
everything I do blurs honestly I found that my niche was rather than in giving sort of psychological tests to patients or even doing therapy, I could make much more of an impact in kind of environmental improvement. We literally found that when we improved the physical environment, the patients improved.
So, so in terms of going from the say, instead of doing therapy or tests, was that what your training was?
As I said, I don't do boundaries well. It's not that. Your question is very legitimate. After the mental hospital reform, we really made a difference and helped close down the large, isolated, punitive warehouses that existed. And I worked on, we worked with the Forest Service for 10 years on getting trees planted the idea was to combat global warming, deforestation. We would plant trees in urban areas, like the city nearby us. I worked with their program and we ended up planting, and it was citizens groups that did it. We planted 1 million trees in 10 years. That's 100,000 trees a year for 10 years, which amounted to a phantom power plant. The idea was that the cooling, the was supported by the utility, which didn't want to build another expensive power plant. And so we planted enough trees to shade enough areas that they wouldn't have to build this power plant. The fundamental lesson of ecology is that everything is connected. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't see separating the different parts of my life. Be really foolish.
I think you've really answered this in what you've already said, but I was going to ask you about do you get paid for your environmental work? I think what you've said is it is your job, but it's your life as well. So,
yes. Yeah. My modus operandi and my modus vivendi coincide. As a university professor, I'm supposed to do research, and so my values dictated it should be something that makes a difference in the world, it ended up being environmental research. Yeah. I found I could make more of an impact in that than in other areas.
Yes. Okay, and the next one was about finding the time to do the work, which seems like we're going over the same.
No, there's another angle there. I just gave a talk on action research, which is we work with community groups in doing the research. So they're the ones who do the footwork. Like with the street tree work, we collaborated with with local tree planting groups. They're part of an international movement called Global Relief, LEAF. We provided the research assistance for them, to do their own surveys. I didn't. Well, my grandmother used to say that if you want something done, you ask a busy person. And I've always had plenty of time. Mm-hmm. And I've taught at a bunch of couple of architecture schools and Tokyo Institute of Technology and a whole bunch of other places, you know, Department of Design and at Reno there. So I have been paid for, you know, what I do. I've written books that I collected royalties on. The earning a living was probably easier then than now. Now people get grants. I learned to do research with community groups that we didn't need outside money.
Mm. Okay, yeah, because the next part of that question is finding resources to do the work.
Yeah, well, in action research, the agencies, the groups we work with provided the funds.
Yeah.
Like we did 10-year collaboration with the Forest Service in street tree planting. They did, you know, give money that supported the research assistants, but the university paid my salary.
Yeah.
Now, I work at a university that has a strong public service commitment.
Have you been part of developing that?
I certainly support it.
Yeah.
No, it was called a land grant college with a strong agricultural mission, and helping the farmers and ranchers in the state was part of the work.
Yeah. What do you think? What kinds of personal qualities and professional skills have been most valuable to you in your environmental work?
I was very nearsighted as a child. I had scarlet fever as a kid, but I've always paid attention to what was close to me. Now you don't notice it now because I had lens implants there, but I wore sort of Coke bottle lenses, one time, and so things that are around me, I noticed the walls and the the color scheme and. At the hospital, what was really odd was that I noticed this and other people habituated.
Yeah.
And it bothered me. So kind of being a good observer is critical to doing field research.
And it sounds like you've worked with a lot of community groups as well.
Yes.
So what
yes.
is it about you that enables you to do that work, do you think?
A willingness to tolerate messiness.
Yeah.
We were talking about that in my session. That it's murky. It's not. I'm not a control freak.
Okay.
That flexibility and willing to tolerate, kind of, not total control over the situation. That's I have very little desire for control over people or anything.
Yeah.
I go with nature rather than try to control it.
Oh.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, you're in here for a meeting?
Yeah, not a meeting, but presentations.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we've just changed locations, and I was asking you about personal qualities and professional skills, and you were talking about. Being nearsighted and noticing,
yeah,
noticing
yeah,
things.
Yes, yeah, no, yes. Being a good observer is critical, and paying attention to what isn't there. That this is something is missing. You pay attention. You notice that. You notice where there isn't interaction when they're, when people are standing, too far apart. You notice the absence of interaction as well as the presence of it.
Yeah, and you said you're open to messiness
yes.
as well.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. To yeah. When you work with community groups, or you work with, you work with government agencies like the Forest Service. You have to be sensitive to political realities. But you still have to have your internal values.
Yeah.
And I've been then the what called reflection. I keep kind of a journal, and I write about what goes on. you know, whether I write about this conference, is, I'm not sure, but I mean, I have opinions about it, yeah. And that will that I will reflect on what happened today, and these are just notes for me, not for they're not for anyone else.
Yeah.
So being a reflective person, where you have experience, and then I kind of believe in the kind of the existential notion of the importance of action, where through action you define yourself, you define the limits of what you're able to do, you hold back, you don't learn anything about yourself or the world.
So in a way that you're saying that you're in a constant action research cycle yourself, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I'm eager to see the limits of what I do as well, and that's taken me to some unusual places. Like I not only write for my fellow sort of behavioral scientists, but I write a column for the local newspaper. I write for, well, on our bicycle path researcher, I wrote for Bicycling Magazine. Now there are mountain bike magazines and all these. And when we worked with the tree planting groups, I wrote for, you know, for them.
Yeah.
And I had to adapt my style to them. When I wrote for nurses, I had to, you know, we talked about what a nurse can do in changing the hospital environment. I had to adapt that style.
Yeah. And is that hard to do?
No, it became much easier. No, when I first started, I didn't really know what I was doing. My first article on changing environments, I sent to the Canadian, I was working in Canada at the time, I sent to the Canadian Architect, a magazine called Canadian Architect. They took all of my tables, you know, of numbers, and converted them all into figures, and then put in these drawings.
Right, okay.
I learned that.
Yeah, yeah.
Then when I was working on designing a kind of tropical island resort, I was a collaborative project with the architects and everything. They sketched the island before trying to design anything. It was a way of getting a feeling for the landscape.
Yeah.
And I learned from that, and I started drawing too.
Yeah.
And then they used photography in a way that I never had. I just took pictures of, you know, friends and people and that, and I took tourist pictures. They did professional pictures.
So I've just sat in on a presentation. Joe Ressa, actually,
yes,
and a
right.
couple of other people, names
yeah.
elude me at the minute, but about collaboration.
Yes.
Jeff Syme about the Ningaloo Reef in the Western Australian coast, and about cross-disciplinary collaboration and the importance of knowing language, and the way language can get in the way.
Yeah, I work at a much more concrete level. We get trees planted, or
yeah.
that's my. It's pro-environmental, and to me, it's, you know, to talk in abstract terms about global climate change. That's nice, but let's plant more trees. Let's get more people out of cars and et cetera.
Yeah. So what are your current research activities or interests?
Well, right now I'm collaborating on a book about mushrooms of the of the United States West. I don't think it's appropriate. I mean, I retired 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't have a lab. I don't have graduate students or anything.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But I still am, you know, writing about these topics,
yes.
but I'm not out there doing the research that I used to do.
But you're facilitating a workshop today for people who
I love to talk and write, yes.
I
make a distinction between talking and writing, scribbling and babbling, and actually getting out there and doing research. I love doing research. It was the biggest discovery of my life, that people would actually pay me to study the most fascinating creature in the universe that's human.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm a people watcher, I'm an observer, and the idea that you can earn a living that way, that was great.
In terms of teaching, so you've done the workshop today, which was an action research workshop. And is that how is it that you run that workshop?
I'm not sure I get the question.
No, it wasn't clear.
No. Okay, you mean what I did, or you know?
Yeah, do you want to? Yeah.
No, my goal was to present a different model for doing research, rather than sitting around sort of making up your own studies. It's to work with community organizations. Like, I think the greatest failing of environmental psychology is their inability to work with Friends of the Earth, with Greenpeace, with the international environmental movement. I don't know anyone here who is devoting themselves to finding out, you know, the things that those groups want to know. As I said, I work with groups that actually, you know, try to improve environments, and I think that's, you know, a good modus operandi. Truthfully, I am not an activist by heart. I'm kind of introverted. It doesn't seem that way, but basically I am. Yes. And doing research has been a wonderful career.
Is that because, in a way, research, when you do have that interaction, it's a purposeful interaction?
My wife can find out more about someone talking to them for 5 minutes than I can in an hour conversation with them. Like, truthfully, I know really nothing about you. If she had an interview with you, if she had been talking with you for 15 minutes, she would learn lots about you.
Well, today's about you, so...
I got it, but she would have made it more. I was temperamentally a good researcher in abilities of think abstractly but also concretely, to detach myself from things. And to me, everything is a research project.
Yeah.
Color, carpeting, it's all a research project.
Okay, so in terms of activism and community work,
I have belonged to the Sierra Club for 45 years. Yes. I support environmental organizations. I believe in community radio and support them. I am not a, follow me, man. We're going to do something. I'm much better at working with, collaborating with activists than I am in being one myself. I'm not an entrepreneur, but I have assisted environmental entrepreneurs. Now, when I work with parents of the mentally ill, I was so impressed with their ability to go to legislators and get programs going. That was not my forte. Other people are better at whispering in the king's ear than I am.
In terms of your environmental work,
go ahead.
I think you've pretty much covered this.
Go ahead.
What's the experience of doing the work meant for you as a person and as a psychologist?
I can look in the mirror and feel that I did something to make a better world, which was how I got into this field. I was very good at math and might have pursued a career as a mathematician, but I wanted to make the world better. Not perfect. I followed George Orwell in that. I don't want to make the world perfect, just better. I'm very kind of wary of sort of people who want a perfect world. I have not been as successful as I hope to be in getting other psychologists to write for other outlets, to write for the newspaper, to write for magazines. Most write for each other.
Yeah.
That, to me, is disappointing. Mm. And that they have tended to ignore kind of mundane kind of problems like the orange walls that you were commenting on. They have not, you know, they tried to find more philosophical issues.
Yeah. Sorry.
No. I like to have research that I can document whether it worked or not, where I can actually, and I guess I'm a quantomaniac and trying to measure things.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really looked at the farmers market work that we did. We, you know, helped the, when we started, there were 5 certified markets in California. Now there are over 450. And we can document all these things. So I do like to have clear criteria of whether something succeeded or not. Like I did help to reform mental hospitals.
Yeah.
But then I was brought in to see if I could do something about prisons. And I thought I could do the same thing, you know, with, you know, these gray, terrible buildings and everything. In mental hospitals, I was an insider and I was welcomed. Prisons, I was a reformer, and that was a pejorative word. They didn't want me.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything in prisons.
Yeah.
I wrote my articles, but nothing happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got worse. They got more crowded, and you know, they really deteriorated. So I'm pretty honest about where I've failed, where I, you know, made a difference.
Yeah. So in terms of, like you were saying earlier about your journaling, is that something that you've done for how long?
Okay. I have written a lot.
Yeah.
And I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and write. The journaling is a way of sort of making sense out of the craziness of that experience.
Yeah.
When I worked in the mental hospital, you know, all the craziness was not in the locked wards. The hospital procedures were weird.
Mm.
People didn't know why they were in there, how to get out. So in all the things I've done, I've written notes to myself, which often became articles, but
yeah,
they weren't written as articles.
Mm. What would you say then to someone who wanted to get into this area?
I just had a graduate student visit, you know, actually a fresh PhD visit, and I told her to work in applied units, like she was very into food policy, that she should try to get a job being a behavioral scientist in one of these units where there are activists working out there, promoting healthy diets, promoting the use of local agriculture, and that it's much better to do that than, you know, sit in an office and dream up your own projects, or read the journals looking for a missing footnote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I think collaboration with activist groups, departments, etc. The most satisfying academic appointment I had was in the College of Agriculture, where they both had applied and basic research in the same department.
Mm.
When I was taught psychology, the model was that basic research would lead to applied research, which would lead to application. That was a lie.
Mm.
Basic research led to more basic research, which led to more basic research, and that people did basic research all their lives.
Yeah.
And so I feel people have to broaden themselves and start doing collaborative research with activist groups, particularly in the environmental field. And the activist groups are, you know, the Greenpeace, etc.
Yeah.
As I said, I don't know a single psychologist who is collaborating with Greenpeace, you know, or Sierra Club.
Right, okay, yeah. Okay, so that was someone getting involved in, what would you say?
I'd say get involved with activist groups and try to be helpful as a psychologist.
Yeah. Rather than as an activist.
Oh, no, you can be an activist, but you have a certain set of skills as a psychologist. Put them to use. No, I feel I was very helpful with architects because they were visual people who didn't read. And I was, you know, I read, and I could help them, you know, see the value of research studies.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so what we're planning to do with the interview was to, because that's the end of the questions.
Yeah.
So,
but okay.
Yeah. So is to put it on the website of the Australian Psychological Society, so that people interested in the. Yeah. Area would be able to listen to it.
Sure.
So, is it anything else that you wanted to say?
No, it's been really. You know, as I said, I look forward to seeing the outback, and then over to Darwin. And that was my third visit to Australia.
Yeah.
First, I was working on a design project in Fiji, and came over here, talked at the University of Sydney in architecture. Then my son worked. In aquaculture in Perth, visited him, and now back in Noah. It's a huge country. I'm impressed by the enthusiasm and that the number of young people. I see them everywhere.
Yeah.
It's also a very prosperous country, work out your problems.
Okay. And when we were coming down the stairs, the recorder wasn't on, so you were saying about your train journey, so...
Oh, yeah, okay. After we leave Melbourne, we will go to Adelaide, spend a few days there, and then take the GAN train up to Alice Springs, spend a few days there, then head up to Darwin, then fly back to Sydney and flap our little wings and are out of here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay. Yeah.
Much appreciated.
Oh, okay. No, good to do it now because I didn't know when we were going to do it otherwise.
All right.